I came in partway through there. But you were asking about memory of hearing the Dhamma.
Like yesterday and today.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking whether memory of visible object seems not to alter over time. But Ajahn said that only in this life, after this life,
not the same object. But the same great object. Understanding is there to understand what appears, even if it's not the same.
So that's from the Dhamma, from the memory of Dhamma.
Yes. Yes.
Listening to Dhamma, and there is no understanding at that moment, is the memory of what is heard accessible at a later time through memory? So you may say, seeing sees at this moment.
So it's not the word, but it's now. The seeing now is seeing, which sees whatever appears. We do not just talk about the term and the word in the story. But whenever there is the word seeing, it's here. This is the way to understand Dhamma. And it sees, and there is that which is seen, just at the moment of seeing only. No more.
And if there is no understanding at that moment,
it can be kept.
And
in memory, so that there can be conditions for considering. Whenever you hear it again and again and again.
Yes.
Otherwise, who can understand seeing right now?
So the considering again and again is the considering of the memory of what has been heard.
If there is no memory, how can they be thinking about that? But it's there. So it depends on other conditions like vipassana to think about it or not. Because memory is not thinking. And thinking things all the time after seeing and hearing. Actually, after seeing, moment has fallen away. Vipassana jetsik arrives. Instantly, just follow anything which appears. Moving on and on and on that object.
We were talking the other day about, and was saying that sometimes, and I think this is my experience too, that you can be doing something, maybe you're preparing a meal or you can be shopping or anything like that, and it seems like from nowhere there's thinking about Dhamma. Now, is that prompted by memory? Or can we not know what it is prompted by?
As a seeing, there is thinking, unknowingly. How can you know what will be the next moment? Whether it thinks about this or that?
So we cannot know what prompts it. In a Dhamma discussion, but then again, it's like making an assumption, isn't it, that it is the Dhamma discussion that is prompting the thinking about Dhamma. I mean, that's probably highly likely, but...
After seeing, thinking follows. So at the moment, depending on what is heard. So thinking about what is heard.
Okay.
With understanding considering.
But in the shopping mall, Dhamma is not heard.
Because what is seen and vipassana cetasika arise and follow the object which is seen with story about it, thinking about it.
So it's a
but
story.
If there's thinking about Dhamma in the shopping mall,
or soap, or food, not just visible object, like that.
What you're saying is that it seems that the thinking is totally unrelated to what is experienced at that moment, but I think that because the tendency to think in a certain way has been accumulated, so even if there isn't that kind of thinking for a long time, still the accumulation is there. So by decisive support condition, that thinking can arise again later, like you were saying about memory, you know, why you suddenly remember something. You may not have thought about it for a long time, and then you suddenly remember your old house or something, because there has been that marking with sanya before, when there was thinking about it, and that tendency is accumulated in each citta, so it can arise at any time.
Do I understand the Ajahn Sutra to say that, among other things, it is conditioned by something that is seen or heard?
at this moment they're seeing. Yes. You don't know that you already think about the shape and form.
Right.
So and it's already being marked by these sounds, so maybe 2 years later you hear the sound. You don't know that there's any thinking or marking of that sound, but 2 years later there may be thinking of that particular kind of sound again, because actually it has been marked now, and that tendency is already being accumulated.
Like in a dream, I think, like, it feels like this power thing. Like. Third thing, like in a dream, it's nothing there, it's just our thinking is so vivid that it sounds like we just heard something in the dream.
So the apparently spontaneous arising of thinking of the Dhamma.
And there's nothing spontaneous, everything
yeah,
is conditioned.
Yes.
Any thinking is conditioned.
The dream seemed in some ways to mirror that.
Right, suddenly having strange ideas and thinking. But of course that tendency has to be accumulated to think in that way. Mm-hmm. Basically, while the defilements are still there, Narahat won't have that experience.
Are you saying, in relationship to the dream, an Arahat wouldn't have a bad dream?
An Arahat doesn't dream.
It doesn't dream at all.
Oh.
Because? No lobha dosa moha.
No latent tendencies.
No latent tendencies.
So dreams are very much an expression of lobha or dosa.
So what is dream?
Ask, can dream be kusala?
Yes, because what is a dream?
Thinking.
Thinking. Can thinking be kusala?
Well, I have had dreams about Dhamma.
Very good.
Thinking about generosity
or thinking about like these sorts of discussions actually. But the understanding is about the same.
Who knows? When it grows. Just grow a little at a time.
There is an expression when people say about they hope for something, and someone else will say, in your dreams. So it's a little bit like that. Understanding will grow in my dreams.
Otherwise you might think that you dream that you have a lot of understanding, but when you get up, no understanding.
Oh, God.
It's impossible.
Yes.
Why doesn't an Arahat the dream? Can he think?
Yes.
Can Arahat the think? Yes. So he knows about thinking. With sati, before going asleep, and as soon as he wake up, sati all the time, because there's no akusala.
Mm-hmm. He couldn't have kusala dreams.
No more kusala, no more akusala.
But why not kriya jitas with sobhana jitas?
It thinks and Arahata knows that it's thinking. With awareness, with sati.
No conditions. Because of the sati just before going to sleep.
Does it mean that when he sleeps all his jitas are bhavanga? So there's no in-between of waking and...
As soon as they're thinking, he knows that it's thinking.
So he's awake.
A dream, yeah. And he sleeps very little anyway. When there is no akusala, there must be sati, jitta.
John, could you explain the difference between accumulations and vipaka?
Vipaka is the result of Dhamma.
And what are accumulations?
Each citta arises and falls away, and what is accumulated passes on from that moment to next moment.
So accumulations are the result.
Kusala and akusala.
So could you describe accumulations as the result of citta?
We have different pachya.
Okay.
That is not by way of kamma pachya, because it's not the deed that has been done so that it can produce such vipaka when the time is right. But the accumulation of kusala and akusala in general, condition different thinking and different lobha and dosa in different ways. We have not the same manners of like or dislike, like I like this, you might like that, by accumulation, but it's not conditioned by karma. Karma produces vipaka, like seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. And after that, thinking is not vipaka. So it's conditioned by accumulation of kusala and akusala thinking.
So it's conditions that produce the, not karma, but bhajjaya.
Thinking?
That, yeah.
No.
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 Atapupanisaya.
Natural, decisive support condition, which is the most common, biggest condition.
And can you elaborate a bit on that?
So all the accumulations to think in a certain way or like certain things or dislike certain things is all by Bhaktu Upanisya Pachya, natural decisive support condition. So that's why one person likes this and another likes that, for example. So after a moment of vipaka, the result of karma such as seeing, then there is thinking about what's seen or thinking about anything from the past. But the thinking and the likes and the dislikes is quite distinct from the vipaka, the result of karma. So the thinking and the accumulation is by Bhaktu Upanisya Pachya.
Strong coffee?
Strong tea?
Yeah, or
with milk, without milk.
What color? Red or black?
What is the decisive part of Bhaktu, like natural decisive support? What does the decisive mean?
I think that if we think in different language, not Pali language, it's not clear at all. But if you think that anything cannot arise without condition, so one conditions that which is experienced, pass on from moment to moment, no matter like a dislike, color or object or anything.
Perhaps that's what I was asking about yesterday when I talked about the flavor of me in everything, or in many things. That it was like that which appears to distinguish my preferences from, say, yours or something like that. No, it's not me, but it's you're actually saying that there are these
tendencies,
yes, which can seem like personality or something like that. Seem like
what you say is true, but it's not you.
Yes, that's
it's
right.
It's the accumulation of reality.
So I was kind of describing it differently, but it's that kind of resonated with that.
And you can see why it's by conditions or why it's decisive. Like every day you may choose strong tea and then one day out of the blue decide to have weak tea. Well, actually that accumulation is there, but you don't know about it. There can be conditions, so some we never know what will be decisive or what will condition a particular tendency at any moment. So that's why it's so anatta, no person at all, just different tendencies from moment to moment.
But it's not like making decision, it's just a condition. It seems like it decides, but actually...
I thought that it was the conditions that make the decision, that decide somehow.
Yeah. Sounds like the decisive condition,
Because
nothing to do with
no body is decided at all, but that reality, that spatria, seems like it decides, but by accumulation.
What decides seeing to arise, what decides kusala and akusala to decide, no one. But there are different spatria, and one is Bhaktu Upanisya. For this moment to arise, see? So why, that's why we say decisive, just for the arising of this particular one.
Okay.
And it's interesting because you think of, oh, this person being having this tendencies or that tendencies or something, but when there's that more understanding of this condition and accumulation, one knows that any tendency can arise at any time, and everyone has every kind of tendency, and one has no idea what kind of thinking there's going to be from moment to moment, or what kind of attachment, or what kind of aversion.
Acharya, I have a question relating to a sutta from the Anguttara Nikaya, the Book of the Threes. It's a sutta about the three sectarian tenets. And if I may, I would like just to read part of it. There are, O monks, three sectarian tenets, which, if they are fully examined, investigated, and discussed, will end in a doctrine of inaction, even if adopted because of tradition. What are these three tenets? There are, O monks, some ascetics and Brahmins who teach and hold this view. Whatever a person experiences, be it happiness, pain, or neutral feeling, all that is caused by past action. There are others who teach and hold this view, that whatever a person experiences, be it happiness, pain, or neutral feeling, all that is caused by God's creation. And there are also those ascetics and Brahmins who teach and hold the view that whatever a person experiences is uncaused and unconditioned. Now, O monks, I approached those ascetics and Brahmins holding the first view and said to them, is it true, as they say, that you venerables teach and hold the view that whatever a person experiences, be it happiness, pain, or neutral feeling, all that is caused by past actions? And when they affirmed it, I said to them, if that is so, venerable sirs, then it is due to past action done in a former life that people commit murder, theft, and unchaste deeds, to past action that they indulge in lying, in slanderous, harsh, and idle talk, due to past action that they are covetous, malevolent, and hold false views. But those who have recourse to past action as the decisive factor will lack the impulse and the effort for doing this or not doing that, since for them, really and truly, no motive obtains that this or that ought to be done or not to be done. The term ascetics does not rightly apply to those who live without mindfulness and self-control. This, O monks, is my first justified rebuke to those ascetics and Brahmins who teach and hold such view. Then the Buddha goes on refuting the other two tenets, that is to say, the tenet that whatever a person experiences is caused by God's creation, and the third one, that all those experiences are uncaused and unconditioned. Now, my problem and my question is that, having read this sutta over and over again, I still don't have the answer to the question. Whatever a person experiences, be it happiness, pain, or neutral feeling, by what is it caused? It is not caused, as the Buddha says, by past action. It is not caused by God's creation, and it has no cause. But what is the cause? That is my question. I can't find the answer in the sutta. And it is a very basic one. It's a very fundamental question. What is the cause of all of our experiences, be it happiness, pain, or neutral feeling? It's a big question, but it is very basic.
Can you say that?
We were discussing a little bit at breakfast a topic that relates to this about different kinds of accumulated tendencies. We saw at breakfast how some like tea, some like coffee, some have attachment to the sound, some have aversion, some have pleasant feeling, some have unpleasant feeling. So these are the accumulated tendencies conditioned by natural decisive support condition, pakatu upanisya pachya, on account of what has been seen or heard. So the moments of seeing and hearing and the feeling associated with the seeing or hearing or bodily experience of vipaka, the results of karma, but the tendencies, the inclinations, the likes, the dislikes, arise by natural decisive support condition.
Is that the answer? Latent tendencies, accumulated actions? Is that the cause?
We could say
We can't say that it's all vipaka. We can't say there is not only vipaka in life. That's what the Buddha taught. There is also the akusala tendencies indeed, which condition bad deeds, and these have different feelings accompanying. It's actually about feeling.
Without the accumulated tendencies, there would be no deed performed to bring results. So if there were not the accumulated tendencies of attachment, aversion, and so on, there would be no deeds performed, so there would be no departure.
Well, I think about it, but it doesn't give me the answer yet.
Robert says whether it's determinism and the Dhamma is not like determinism.
No, of course there is no determinism. No, no.
Nor is there no cause.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was heretics. There are three kinds of heretics, and that's in the footnote.
A very difficult question.
Right. I think it is.
I sense more or less why it isn't, but I can't express it. I cannot find the right words to say why it is not.
Ajahn, I think their question then is, what is the difference between determinism and conditioned realities?
Does anyone think that anything can arise at will or without any conditions at all?
No, clearly the Dhamma is not there.
No, it's not.
Since one doesn't yet know all conditionalities, so one thinks that it is determined by such and such. Yeah. But actually, at this very moment, right now, what is it? It has arisen by conditions. Do we have to find out all conditions for this moment's arising? Or even just being sure that whatever arises must depend on conditions. Without conditions, nothing can arise. And then we'll continue on understanding little by little about reality right now. For example, without the object which is experienced, can citta arise? See? As simple as that. No one determines at all. That's why in the sutta we read also about the ayatanas. And 18, this translation was not so good. I think it's 18 elements. So that the elements come together, or the ayatanas, and then there is experience. Many different conditions, not just past karma.
He calls it the 18 mental approaches.
Yeah.
I will ponder over everything which has been said, but I still, for myself, I don't have the answer to the question, what does cause a person experiences, be it happiness, pain, or neutral feeling? What is the cause of it? There are many causes.
Yes, but can we say that as soon as citta arises, there must be feeling arising together? Yes. So, citta is the sahachata paccaya of feeling.
Yes.
Free will is definitely wrong, according to Dhamma. But it's harder to see how determinism is wrong, I think. Because if every moment is conditioned by various conditions,
it does sound like every moment is...
What do you mean by determinism?
Well, there's different definitions, but determinism means pure... Everything's conditioned to arise, I guess.
That's conditionality, that's not determinism.
What's the difference? Can you
explain? Determinism is only different from conditionality when there's the idea of a self.
Yes. Is that right?
When there's the idea of a self.
That's determinism.
That future is determined.
Otherwise, if there's the idea of a self, and it has to be either free will or determinism, there's no other possibility.
Okay. In one sutra in the Digha Nikaya, the Buddha talks about future to come, and he says in the future there will be a future Buddha called Nitya, and he will be born in India, and there will be a king called such and such. This is far in the future from now, and he lists the names of many people and so on. How does that fit in with anything?
It's always the case like that, that there are future Buddhas, so it's not strange. The period is our Buddha, and then there will be a new Buddha who will find
the truth. But he knows the exact name of the people at that time, some of the people. It does sound very fixed, I guess.
The name is not important, it's a conventional.
Is it?
A logic. Is the question posed in the sutta, does that question relate to feeling?
Yes.
The three kinds of feeling.
The commentary, note.
It's not the three kinds of feeling, it's the three tenets relating to the causes of experiences.
But the cause of feeling, experiencing feeling.
Yeah.
Not the cause of experiencing the sensed or objects that are now being experienced, right?
Yeah.
So the question is, what is the cause for different kinds of feeling to arise?
What is the cause of our experiences, be it happiness or unhappiness or neutral?
But cause
of our experiences.
Said, but the experience here is the feeling.
Feeling. It's translated as experience because the commentary says, hold this view, reject two types of feeling, chemically active, kamma che vedana, and functional kriya, feeling. Here are the notes and the commentary notes that's about feeling.
Experience can be understood to mean different things.
Yes,
but
yes.
Here it means feeling.
Yeah.
Only.
I suppose so. I don't know.
Yes.
I think it's important to understand what the question is, because the answer...
That I don't know.
Yes, feeling.
It's about feeling. Feeling arises at every single moment with every kind of citta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it accompanies the citta. So it depends on what the cause of the citta is at that moment. So if the
citta
is vipaka, if it's a moment of seeing consciousness, the neutral feeling that accompanies that moment of seeing is conditioned by karma, because the seeing is conditioned by karma. Mm-hmm. So are the associated citta seekers. But if it's referring to feelings such as when there is attachment, so at this moment there's attachment to sound and the happy feeling, the pleasant feeling accompanying the attachment, like the attachment is conditioned by the accumulation for such attachment.
Yes.
By natural decisive support condition. Yes. So it depends on the citta that it accompanies.
Yes. That's the answer, yes.
But to return to Robert's question about determinism and conditionality, it's difficult to explain often because people say, oh, all is hopeless, we are a hopeless case of victim of fate, and we have to explain that there are many different conditions, and they will still say, so it's all determined, and... maybe you can add something to it.
By whom or by conditions?
If you say just by conditions, people are not satisfied.
Because there is the idea of self. Mm.
Yeah.
Many times the Buddha was asked a tough question, he never answered it.
it's the same, you know, it's taught in different way. A lot of people ask him, you know, is there causes? The Buddha never answered because it's,
he
no use.
No. That's my problem.
he starts with the elements, with the elements and the ayatanas and the kamnas, which is very good because that's the present moment. Always the present moment. And then you won't ask anymore. Is it
there's no need to ask for it, to ask the question.
He wants you
the
to
question becomes irrelevant.
Are you satisfied? Or?
I'd like to hear more. More on it if anyone has any good ideas to help explain. People think if it's just conditioned, then it's all happening. Why they don't need? There doesn't need to be arousing of energy. There doesn't need to be anything because there will be listening to Dharma anyway. There will be everything will happen. And the thing is, they have an idea of a self who should be trying to do something or whatever. So I think if they can understand that there's no self, that is the path anyway. So that's the condition that they should be trying, that should be developed anyway. Understanding anatta. That's the way I look at it. But most people feel that they should be doing something, and hearing that there's only everything is conditioned makes them.
But then you have to explain about that there is no self.
Right.
And then you come again to conditions.
Yes.
So then you are turning around in this in a circle.
It makes it so
difficult. So it's never really a straight answer, so people won't be satisfied. Because you say nothing is determined because there is no self, and how to explain that? Because there are conditions, it's very difficult.
Take time to ponder all this over, said
Ludovic, this is a, you know, this is one of the topics that if you contemplate deeply about this, you've heard Dhamma for many years, and I think you have some understanding of what Ajahn has been teaching, and I think it's basically up to you to really sit and deeply contemplate these questions. And if the conditions are right, then you will have some insight, the understanding, the banya arise for you, and you will find the answers for yourself, and the answer will come. The development is when there are conditions for you to sit and contemplate, you know, really think about it. And of course, there have to be conditions for that. There has to be the wanting to do that. There, not desire wanting, but the other kind of wanting. And there has to be, for you to, if the question is really pressing, then you will sit and contemplate about it, and the answer will come. It may not come when you expect it. In fact, it may come when you're doing something you least expect to have it. Yeah, so that's basically what you need to do if to answer the question.
Yeah, because the Buddha said that we have to develop our own understanding, not just follow. And that's what Ajahn also stresses. Right.
It's very individualized.
We have to develop our own understanding.
Exactly.
And you have those questions? Is this the same as we were discussing earlier, where the tendencies and accumulations come in because of natural decisive support?
Yeah, I think so. I think that especially when you're talking about attachment and the pleasant feeling with attachment. So it depends on the tendency which arises as a result of.
And the unpleasant natural feeling with
aversion.
Aversion, yeah.
If I can describe the context a little bit. We were discussing thinking about Dhamma, which seemed to arise unprompted. We might be shopping or doing something, certainly not discussing Dharma, and thinking about Dharma would arise. So there was a question around that. Why does that happen? And how does that relate to memory? So there was kind of two layers to that.
Okay. I think that if one does not forget about Dharma and anatta, that's the answer.
Does not forget, but we cannot
not enough understanding.
To remember. Yeah. So, in fact, it seems that a lot of the difficulty is that there is much forgetting. like even we will sit and discuss and then get up and go to lunch and they're already there is forgetting. So what do you mean when you say don't forget anatta and don't forget
I
anatta?
Mean that if
okay. So if we don't forget. So the if is very important. Mm-hmm. If we don't forget. So it's like if there is not the condition for forgetting, mm-hmm. then there will be more thinking about Dhamma.
What Ajahn said is not enough understanding. That's the cause. So we have to listen more, and then there will be conditions for more understanding. And that will make us forget less. But it's very difficult.
It seems like one is interested in knowing or understanding the term and what is in the book. What about the listening now in order to understand reality right now? Like when we are talking about seeing, we think about conditions for the arising of seeing, not the seeing right now, which has already arrived. It has a reason. And it is that which experiences visible object or the object of seeing, and it now sees no one. This is the way to understand seeing or anything, not just the term or the word, whether it's called nama or whether it's conditioned by such and such. But there is no understanding of the actual seeing right now. And Dhamma is now. And Buddha helped us to understand by explaining in details about all realities as much as we can get it. But in order to understand reality right now.
And earlier you were saying, remember that it's Dhamma and Anatta. Are you saying that we listen about the details in order to understand that it's just Dhamma and everything is just Anatta?
Right.
That perhaps connects with another question that we were discussing after you left, Ajahn. And that was about intellectual understanding and how much is enough? Because it was
when there is understanding reality right now. If there is no understanding of reality right now, can we say that that's enough?
But I think that even when there is direct understanding, the intellectual understanding goes on. It would not stop. It would go together.
And Sanjay can see that it's Dhamma.
Yes.
However, it was... of course, that is true, that if there's not understanding of reality, then there is not enough intellectual understanding. But the nature of intellectual understanding seems that there are times when you perhaps point out that just to concentrate on the words, the names, the labels is
to become detached from seeing right now as so, because usually I am seeing, but when there's more and more intellectual understanding, there can be the moment of understanding the nature of seeing as a conditioned moment.
And is that development of intellectual understanding with terms, without terms, with a balance between terms? And like, sometimes it's confusing what intellectual understanding actually means. I know we've asked this many times, but
I think that the terms represent reality or different quality or different characteristic of reality, not just term. Like when we touch something and it's hard, or when you taste something, can you explain the taste or the flavor so that the other can understand that perfectly?
So that explanation is intellectual understanding.
But I think that it represents reality. So when it's a tangible object, we don't mind how soft it is or how hard it is. because it cannot be known until there is the moment of experiencing it. We can talk about wholeness here, but if without touching, who knows what is there, the degree of heat and cold.
But if we just learn a list of names and labels, that's not intellectual
that's
understanding.
That's
because
right.
It's
that's a
just
preoccupation with labeling.
Yes. So intellectual understanding can help direct understanding.
It will lead to the understanding of reality right now, when it's enough to be conditioned for the arising of direct awareness.
At what point does right understanding become panya?
Right understanding itself is panya.
Even there, at least in that intellectual right understanding, that's a degree of panya.
Yeah. I hear the term, we are into terms, pariyatti. Is that
intellectual
understanding? And that's a low, that's a type of panya.
Beginning.
Like if it's useful reflection on Dharma now, it's pariyatti, intellectual understanding, but if it's just memorizing some terms, there isn't any panya, there isn't any understanding, so then it's not intellectual understanding.
So there is like a, I can only describe it as like a movement backwards and forwards between thinking about Dharma and, like you said, experiencing, checking the experience against thinking, testing the thinking with the experience.
Is it not someone who is testing?
Well, of course that is in there, but there's also thinking about that there isn't, or is it not supposed to be. I think the difficulty I have with intellectual understanding is that it seems almost to be stuck at the level of thinking.
Thinking is Dhamma.
Yes.
You cannot get away from having thinking arise.
Yes. But there must... Do I understand that you were saying there must be more than thinking for intellectual understanding to condition direct... understanding of direct experience.
I think the common between pariyatti, that's intellectual understanding, and patipatti, that's direct understanding, is that it refers to the present moment experience.
Yes.
In the first case, it's not direct experience yet, but when we hear, we know what it's being referred to. To now, the moment now, there's just not enough understanding accumulated to directly know the characteristics. But there is the understanding that what's heard, what's studied, is about present moment experiences.
Bit of a slippery slope, though, isn't it? When you start thinking about seeing and visual object, then you start, there can be looking for it, searching for it, trying to do something.
It's conditioned when it arises, not anyone at all.
But the moments of looking for it or wondering what it might be like.
Sandhya can see that it's a reality, a conditioned reality.
Panya.
Until then.
So those moments of thinking
about anything.
Yes.
Earlier, Betty was suggesting to Lodovic he should sit and contemplate his question, but I wouldn't see that as being necessarily any kind of intellectual understanding.
Well, one can also stand or walk.
I'm not saying you have to sit in a lotus position and contemplate, but what I am saying, I didn't even mention the word sit, what I am saying is that there has to be some deep thought. Ajahn is always telling us to do picharana. That's what that is.
Considering,
Considering, whatever word you want to use for it. Okay? And that, because that is an important part of the process.
There's a big difference between considering naturally
and doing, considering.
Considering naturally, yeah. Of course. If I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to consider from 5 to 7 today, then it's...
No, but then we are the kitchen or so, we can happen to think of the Dhamma or what we heard, anywhere.
Yeah, that's what I also mentioned before. Is that, you know, it can't be, I'm going to sit and consider
from 5 to
7.
No, you didn't mean that. That was clear.
Chan.
Yeah.
And may just show a difference between just having concepts about realities and the difference between this and understanding. Just my experience, once I was listening to Achan with my eyes closed talk about visible object, that immediately reminded me about sound. You know, it's not about the story of visible object, but what that could point to a reality that arises in the moment.
Yeah.
But it's still intellectual.
Yeah.
Because it's still thinking about the sound. Yeah. That's what I think is pariyati.
No, I think it could be just a moment of sati, very short, and then thinking afterwards.
It,
that will be natural. That will be very natural.
And that's why it's important to know that when we hear, it's just reminders about it all being just dhammas. Yes. Not try to experience the try to catch the different experiences there, but hearing and touching, because that's not how it's going to happen, because our understanding is still, even when we hear about the different dhammas, it's still with self, like my hearing, my sound. Initially, it has to be like, it's just experience, just dhammas arising and falling away.
My thinking about dhamma, my thinking about visible objects.
Yeah.
Can I go back to the shopping mall and being somewhere out where apparently, unexpectedly, one begins to think about the Dhamma, and I that could be just thinking, or I guess this is my question: is it just thinking, or considering? There are also conditions, I think, if one, becomes involved in some other, spiritual pursuit, becomes a sort of, turn to deep Christianity or something. I'm sure lots of thoughts arise associated with that. Yeah, I guess I'm just...
I think her question is there anything else, Ajahn, you would like to say about...
With self.
Okay.
Sorry, with doubt, yeah.
No, concerning with... self.
I was going to say concerning with accumulations and tendencies, but actually it's concerning with self.
Yeah.
Why I think this way, and how come I had that particular dream, and
it belongs.
Well, I know once you get there, you're really on. there's no panya arising with that one.
Anything more on the dreams and thinking and that side of things and arahats and.
There was some discussion about the accumulation of memory from lifetime to lifetime. That was interesting about...
This is more interesting than understanding reality right now.
It was then.
But not now.
Many things, the whole things, a lot, not understanding reality right now.
It seems we're more interested in stories.
Different
stories.
That's right.
And there was the comment about, why there's always thinking about the same object and the response only in this lifetime.
It shows attachment right then. But when there is understanding, there is no attachment. The only way to have less and less attachment is to understand reality at this very moment.
That's right. It seems like it's interest, but it's just attachment. Yes. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the idea about the stories is that there's some thinking that the story may help understanding.
attachment to stories. Yeah, and yeah, the belief that we figure things out by having such explanations. But with Dhamma, we know that the only object of real understanding is the present moment. So how much we've accumulated of that understanding, then correspondingly we recognize when we drift off into actually loba trips.
The stories about karma help us to understand karma more than Abhidharma explanations. I mean, suttas that talk about the man who was born extremely wealthy because of some dana in a previous lifetime, do they have a relevance that we need? Do we need those stories to hear? Or is it sufficient that we study Abhidharma about?
Can anyone be sure about the understanding of karma without understanding reality right now? By understanding more and more about reality, one can see that seeing is conditioned, hearing is conditioned. So can anyone escape from the previous karma, which conditioned each moment of seeing and hearing and think?
That's what Ken is saying. Ken is saying that the only relevance is to understand the present moment. When we think about stories about, as Robert gave the example of a prince it was, who was in, who just got received food from a good deva, or what was that?
I think it was Anuruddha when he was young.
Oh, Anuruddha.
Because of karma he'd made in past lives, he never had to work. And his food and everything was given to him on a gold dish, and he just thought food came from a gold dish. It's like when Alex, my son, when he was young, he said he wants money, and I said, oh, you can't just have money. And he said, it's easy, Dad, I've seen you. You just go and put your card in the wall near the bank, and you get money. It's easy. And Anuruddha, through his life, always thought everything came in the same easy way. And so his brother explained about actually, to get rice, the farmers have to do this and so on. And he was so shocked, he became a monk. I'm not sure if it was Anuruddha, anyway, it was one of the Buddha's relatives. After he heard that, found out how food and everything really does arise, he became a monk. But the reason he was so wealthy to not experience any hardship was because in a past life he'd done much merit.
So the point is whether it's helpful to consider, I mean, how should we think about such stories?
It seems like one is so firm belief about karma and vipaka, but without the understanding of seeing and hearing, can we say that it's firm understanding?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just belief.
So that is the story of seeing, hearing, smelling, and we call Anuruddha's life, but actually what is the vipaka right now is conditioned by karma, which we cannot tell which one at all. But to be sure that no one can have seeing, hearing at will right now, while one is fast asleep, who knows that what would be the next vipaka which will come without anyone's will at all. For example, while one is fast asleep, no sound, no smell, no taste, no thinking at all. But how comes sound to appear? See, it seems like it's very common and very natural. But actually, from not being something arising, appearing, and then sound arises, sound appears, to what? To hearing. And what condition hearing to arise, not seeing to arise, not tasting. But it has to be that particular sound which is heard right then. If it's not the right karma which produced that moment, there is no hearing. Sound cannot appear. Even right now, any sound is heard. It has to arise and contact, impinge on the ear base. And if it's not time for karma to produce the hearing consciousness, there will be no seeing at all. But since there is hearing right now, one is so sure about the previous karma, anyone, which condition hearing right now. at this moment of hearing something which we don't expect, like the sound of the bird or whatever sound it is, without any expectation at all. By this way, one can be so very firm about the karma and the vipaka.
So this is the way to go. Would you say then that thinking in terms of situations actually take us away from understanding?
It's not like being so sure, like this moment of hearing and seeing different time by karma.
Just having a story about karma, and does that at any level help?
But if I and someone is not the conditioned reality yet.
Right, but even on that level we could consider at the level of that there is karma and there is vipaka.
But
just a reminder.
Close, but not as close as to understanding, seeing, hearing right now.
So would you say better not think so much in terms of stories?
Anyone can think about anything, but it depends on understanding.
Right.
But you can read those stories with more understanding, so it gets more meaningful afterwards.
So can we go back a bit further with, we're talking, it seems like we're Parker now, you know, you're saying this Bawanga Jitta and then how come this sound? That's Vipaka. So if you go to the Gama part of it, then the Gama, you know, we talk about giving and abstaining and stuff, but in reality, it's just jitta, that
one at a time.
So a giving is many jittas. So there is many gammas,
so
being
it can bring more than one moment of seeing.
Yes,
hearing.
Yeah.
Like one seed of rice can produce uncountable seeds or grain of rice.
So it makes the stories look a bit. I don't know. They're there, but. Does that explain, you know, how we were talking?
Yeah.
You were talking about the cow with the thing around its neck.
It does for me. When you say that one moment of karma can produce many moments of vipaka, is it relevant that those moments can all occur in the one lifetime, giving some concept of continuity?
Who knows?
Actually, can I say not one karma, but karma is just jitta. So if there is an act of gusala, act of dana, for example, that's many karma jittas.
No, look the way I see it. Dana is just one moment. It's not a.
Well,
many moments.
Many more. Yeah, it has to be many. Well, it has to be many act of giving.
There's no such thing as act. It's a concept, isn't it? Surely.
Well, to put it another way, a moment of dana was unlikely to arise as a single moment, only jitta only, not followed by another, at least one other or several.
Mm. Especially when it translates to bodily action,
yeah.
It must initiate in the mind.
An intention, you know.
Yes. Anyway, the seven javanas.
Wouldn't most of those be
at least seven?
Yes, but most of those acts, when I give money to a beggar, most of them would be akusala, thinking of myself, and then maybe one would be true dana.
It wouldn't be one dana,
wouldn't it?
It's got to be more than one.
So when we talk about dana, are we talking about a moment or a process?
Each moment, which is kusala.
I find thinking about the stories of karma quite useful, because I know I tend to think about life anyway when I see something happening, or I think about life and stories anyway naturally. So I'd rather think about reach dharma conclusions when I'm having my stories about life. Like, I think, Ken, you didn't like some of the Dhammapada stories much that I quoted, like the crow is flying through the air in a Dhammapada commentary, and the flame shoots up from a fire unexpectedly into the air and roasts the flying crow. And the monks are surprised by this unusual occurrence, and they go to the Buddha and say, why did this happen to this flying crow? And the Buddha explained, well, in a past life, he was a man who had, I forget what he did actually, burned someone. Obviously, I don't know if that's true or not or anything, but I find those sort of stories help me understand life in general when I'm thinking stories about life in a dharmic sort of way.
But but wasn't our discussion about whether when there is the original karma with an idea of burning straw, that when the vipaka results, there will also be an idea of burning straw or something similar. But there won't, will there?
Well, sorry, I don't
there won't necessarily be a conceptual connection between the karma and the vipaka.
No.
Burning straw here, burning straw there, sort of thing, as in the sutta.
Oh, you mean the sutta was too direct or something?
Well,
there's no generalization you can draw.
No, but we're drawing that because in a past life that person had killed someone and with strong akusala, in this current life he had that type of experience of dying that way.
So just the fact of there being a link.
Yes, there was a link, right, according to Dharma. But I gathered you didn't quite see that link or you didn't like that link. So
say, for example, if he burnt the straw around the cow,
yeah,
and instead of dying as burned by the fire, he would drown or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, I assume that can happen too. Yeah.
It doesn't help. I mean, I think his point is, apart from the fact of there being a link,
yes,
whether there's any further value in it.
If we start speculating, oh, I'm poor now because I was too stingy last life or something, then that would be an example of sort of useless speculation, I think, wouldn't it?
Well, look, if I see Bill Gates, for example, you know, you see Bill Gates and I sometimes read things, oh, Bill Gates is an evil monster because he's so rich, look at all the poor people. I think these people don't understand that actually Bill Gates must be rich, probably because he did much good in his past lives. So I don't have envy, whereas I feel many people do have envy because they don't understand even the story of karma and vipaka, say.
We're generalizing here. We're being situational. And my understanding is that we're really talking moments of jitta.
What is the kusala vipaka?
Well, I think that's the crux of Ken's question. The Abhidharma only talks jittas and moments, right? And that's what Ajahn's emphasizing too.
Yes.
However, there are suttas and commentaries that give situational stories. And Ken's question basically is, are these story suttas and story commentaries, is there any value in them, or should we just stick totally to Abhidharma? Now, my contention is both are very helpful.
Right.
And that's where Ken and me have a big disagreement on DSG, right? Mm-hmm. Where Ken says, just study the Abhidharma, that's got everything. Why forget, or don't worry, or don't even bother with all these Dhammapada and Jataka stories?
Well, I would
think that the sutta is only properly understood if it can be understood with a degree of understanding
of the Abhidharma,
and with Banya.
In order to understand better, deeper, and more perfect about Vipaka, it does mean that we listen about someone's story or one's own story from birth and understand that when was the kusala vipaka and when was the akusala vipaka. That's not clear enough to see that it's not self at all. There is still the idea of someone, I. And can we say that that is the understanding about vipaka or the vipaka moment or just think about vipaka? But at this moment, it's vipaka which sees, it's vipaka which hears. When there can be the understanding of the nature of reality, no self, so we can understand the cause and conditions better, like this is conditioned by karma or it's conditioned by other paccaya, and so we come closer and closer to understand what is vipaka, not the whole story, but the moment of experiencing through five sense doors, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, no matter when, 2,000 years ago, or in the future, or right now.
Besides, what's more valuable when you're thinking about stories, to realize that that's just thinking, or just be drawn by the stories?
It depends, again, on what we mean by that's just thinking. I mean, someone can say, oh, that's just thinking, but have no faith, say, in karma from the past at all. They just say, this is just thinking, but they could still believe, well, when I die, it's all finished. You
oh,
know?
No, of course.
Like a scientist, right?
Yeah, but a thinking with understanding
right.
about the what needs to be known.
The point is Maeve's question about the intellectual understanding of karma. There can actually only ever be understanding of karma not by reading about different stories, but by understanding what karma and what vipaka is at this moment.
What is the use of the sutta?
Without realities, can there be anyone in the sutta?
No.
We can understand the karma, the vipaka by story, but not the reality right now.
I guess Robert's point is that we don't stop having stories anyway about our life. So when we read the suttas, including the Dhammapada and all that, if in the moment we're having a wrong story of our own about our life, that could be a reminder about a different kind of story that reflects Dhamma. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And can we say that we understand the term karma and vipaka without understanding the reality of karma and vipaka? For example, now, we are talking about vipaka. Can we know the karma right now, which will condition the future vipaka? See? Because the vipaka now is the result of previous karma, unknown which life or when. But now the present karma will condition the future vipaka. Can we understand karma right now as not self? Because it's karma, not anyone at all, even right now. Can it be known? Can it be directly experienced as karma, not self? Even it is now karma, listening to Dhamma, understanding is wholesome karma, but without direct awareness, it's only words that there is kusala karma right now, just thinking about kusala Dhamma. But what is kusala Dhamma, karma? It's not the hearing, see, because hearing is not kusala. But the moment of understanding is the present karma. It cannot produce result after hearing or considering karma right now. But later on, when time comes with proper or right conditions, it can produce result right now, so we can understand. No matter is the present karma, which will condition the future vipaka, or the present vipaka, which is conditioned by previous karma, they are the same, no self. And it has to be like this. The kusala karma will produce the kusala vipaka, and the akusala karma will produce only akusala vipaka. This is the way to understand karma and vipaka.
I think, Bhupin, there's a difference also between talking about the importance of understanding realities now, and then when there's more understanding of realities, whether one's reading suttas or Dhammapada commentary stories or magazines or whatever it is, one knows it's just citta cetta sika rupa, just different dharmas. That's okay, it's fine, and it can be useful. But if one says one should read the stories in order to understand the realities, that's different.
And what citta, which thinks about the story?
Which?
Citta, which kind of citta thinks about the story?
See?
Kusala or akusala?
In the Buddha's time, when people listened and he taught suttas, no doubt about the realities that were being taught about. So if there's a story about Aniruddha or anything else, there's no doubt or question that this is about no thought that this is about a person or self. There was an understanding about accumulations.
And we have so much doubt.
That's right, there's so much ignorance. We immediately think in terms of the person and this person's karma and this person's result. Like for us now, if there isn't any understanding and one hears the story about Aniruddha or anything, and is one going to become a sotapanna?
No, but if one had the fixed idea that one was born and died and that was the end of life, like it's quite a common belief. One heard these stories and started to become open. Oh, there's more than, you know, conditions work not just in one life, they work beyond past lives, future lives and so on. that's gradually coming to have some correct conceptual understanding about Dharma, isn't it?
Well, one might have the idea at the end that, oh, okay, this person, oh, it doesn't finish, but it continues on. Whichever way it is, it has to come back to the understanding of present reality, I think. Mm.
If someone has a strong, extreme wrong belief, can they still develop understanding of the present moment?
But I think that nobody knows about that person's accumulation at all.
It could be past accumulation and hearing the Dhamma in the past, and the hearing of the Dhamma in this present life could...
When there's not enough understanding, everyone does have the wrong understanding, one or another.
And it comes back a little bit to the supermarket analogy. One never knows what tendencies have been accumulated and what may pop up, whether right view or wrong view. For ourselves, just like the others, whatever tendencies they have, we also have accumulated.
And how can there be the understanding of the accumulation?
Only by understanding its characteristic now, when it appears no
just
other
right
time.
Right now, without the idea that I will or I shall
or
do this.
Do anything.
Yeah.
Even an idea, I must read more, I must read less, or I must sit down and consider, or stand up, and it's an obstacle from understanding.
No right awareness at that very moment.
Chan, what are the eight worldly conditions? What dhammas are there?
Chitta, chetasika, rupa, what else?
Right, I mean, so far I have... I came to the conclusion that they are vipakas. And now, everything? What are they? I thought they were results.
Dukkha and dukkha?
Yeah.
Vipaka?
Parinam?
Feeling?
Vipaka.
Vipaka? And gain loss? Vipaka?
Yeah. In those conventional terms for a whole situation, but they consist actually about. Of moments of vipaka.
Right. And,
kusala vipaka, akusala vipaka, and they change all the time. No control.
Right. No control. And that's what Noom was saying. The main idea the Buddha taught this was in order that to know about impermanence and no control. But he didn't relate that particularly to vipaka.
And all the citta, cetasika, and rupa too, arising and falling away.
So it's just, as you were saying, that it's because people do get attached to these eight worldly conditions, the point of the teaching is that they just fall away and without control. Is that the conclusion? Or are they more specific, pointing to specific dhammas?
Can we say about the roots, without all realities, there will be no all the Lokadhamma.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about the worldly conditions, like starting with gain and loss, well, a lot of what we consider as gain has actually nothing to do with vipaka, does it? Because most of what we consider to be gain is like, oh, you suddenly get rich. Well, where's the kusala vipaka of seeing pleasant visible object or pleasant sound? Most of it is just thinking about visible object,
but
thinking about kusala cittas. That's mostly.
I think I once asked you, and I suggested that maybe these are experiences through many doorways, and I thought you agreed to that.
Without citta cetasika, who gain?
There's no one who gain. So what do these really describe?
Citta, cetasika, and rupa.
Even javanas?
The arising, the worldly way, it has to be
both
uncontrollable.
This is just a situation referring to a package, the package of vipaka and javana cittas, any cittas, cetasikas, and rupas.
When you include javana jitas, there. That's the, those are the gamma producing jittas, yes. Correct? Mm-hmm.
And accumulations.
And accumulations, and that's part of the worldly package, as you put it, Sarah.
Well, for example, we say, oh, the gain is I suddenly make some money on the stock market today. We think of that as gain, but actually what is experienced in terms of vipaka, just visible object, sound. So most of what we consider as a gain is the thinking and the attachment,
yes, and the pleasant feeling.
And the pleasant feeling on account of, yes, that.
I have a question on listening, and that we can, well, we say I have to listen more, and it is this me doing this. But we hear this a lot also in the Thai session, when there is not enough listening, there is not enough understanding, and it is so important. So I know for myself that I don't listen enough at home, so I may say, oh, after this stay here in Thailand, I'm inspired to listen for a longer time, and that is all me, or not useless, or we have to listen more. It's true, we hear that.
No sadda?
Yes.
Can sadda be a gusana?
No. So it's good. But we have an idea. I put on the MP3 and listen more.
I think that we cannot say anything about reality, whether it is unwholesome or wholesome,
no,
until there's right understanding of reality right then. Otherwise, it's only speculation.
Yeah.
We can't just assume that because we turn on the tape that it's kusala citta.
We don't know, no. But I shall listen more. The idea, I do it with an idea of self. That I shall listen more.
But then?
Could we distinguish between there needs to be more listening and I must listen more?
Mm-hmm.
Because we understand, yes, that the right condition for, yes, developing understanding is hearing the Dhamma and, yes, and reflecting on it.
Sarah, your comment just then in relation to the worldly conditions, just the example of the stock market, seems to track back to what Ludwig asked earlier about what causes experience, what causes feeling. I thought that was just a very good, simple little example of how there is just citta and jetasika there, and feeling.
It also relates back to what you and Bev also was asking at breakfast about, yeah, the difference between vipaka and accumulations, because the moment of vipaka is so, the moment of seeing visible object is so brief that most of the cheetahs are concerned with the thinking and attachment to what is seen or heard. It's like when one's, the opposite analogy, like when one's sick, when Jonathan had his tumor a few years ago, he actually didn't have any physical discomfort, but one has this, so where is the loss, where is the sickness? Actually, it's just thinking in the mind, because in fact there was, at that time, there was no physical bodily discomfort. So what we consider the loss when we read the doctor's report or something, it's just thinking of dosa, mostly.
Each cheetah, after each cheetah, it's kusala aura. And the my understanding is human.
Yeah. All vipaka jetasikas are conditioned by gamma. The other are not.
The others,
to understand that, the others are not. I heard that, but the others
are not conditioned by gamma pajriya, but by other pajriya.
Yes, okay. That was the end of the sentence I was looking for.
It's not just what we remember, but now it says conditioned by gamma. At moment of hearing, it's conditioned by gamma.
Can this condition be known directly?
Yes.
By developed understanding?
By understanding with awareness right now. For example, hearing sound.
Mm-hmm.
Sound cannot last.
Right.
And hearing cannot last at all.
Right.
Very short, conditioned by gamma to hear it. We don't have to wait for other moment at all. Any moment when it's through eyes, ears, nose, tongue and body. seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
We think at once of the work, but also moments of hearing, because we are not thinking all the time.
Mm-hmm. Just a moment of hearing is vipaka.
Yes. And then we know this is the bird, and it's akusala most of the time. Or understanding that it is thinking, possible.
This is the way to understand what is meant by direct awareness. Because usually there is no awareness, no understanding. It's just that, it's gone. But when there are understanding that usually before the rupa has fallen away, there can be kusala or akusala with or without panya. But usually when there is no awareness, no understanding, one cannot say whether it's what, kusala or akusala. But the right understanding of any reality can be not only to mind door, but also to other doors too. For example, sound is heard and then mind door also has such the same object of hearing so fast. And right understanding can develop too, not just avicca. Otherwise, how can the awareness and right understanding arise, be aware and understand reality as it is? It has to be right then.
Yeah, we cannot understand yet sense door and mind door when there is not the vipassana jnana.
But theoretically, there must be kusala or akusala before arupa falls away, right? Yeah. And the mind can also experience that rupa after the sense door.
Yes.
In between the mind door process and the sense door process, usually the akusala citta arises. But when there are conditions for direct awareness to arise, it is aware and begin to understand. Otherwise, there's no eradication of unwholesomeness at all.
But when it begins, the mind door is not known.
You don't have to specify whether now it's mind door or sense door. But there can be the understanding whether there is direct awareness or no direct awareness at all.
Is it the experience of kusala or akusala at that moment, or the object, like the visible object, or which is the one you're referring to?
No, I'm talking about seeing and hearing, because there is seeing, hearing, and thinking. And the truth is that even if the sense door process, while the rupa, the visible object of the object of seeing, hasn't fallen away yet, there must be kusala or akusala, usually. But when there is enough understanding, and when there is direct awareness, no need to say whether it's through sense door or mind door, because they arise alternately, very rapidly. But the characteristic of the direct awareness is there, different from moment when there is no direct awareness at all. So it's the beginning of understanding what moment is the direct awareness, even it's very short, like now. Everything is so short. Visible objects, sound, seeing, hearing, thinking are very short. As these are very short, direct awareness is short too. But it's different from moment without direct awareness. When we talk about seeing, there is the understanding that seeing is real, it's now conditioned, so it arises and it sees. This is not the direct awareness. But the more you understand, the more there can be moments which begin to be aware of, no matter it's the visible object, as just that which can be seen or of that which now sees as a reality, different reality. So without the direct awareness, it's impossible to understand realities as they are. It's only in thinking, conventional understanding. And without direct awareness, there is no eradication of doubt and wrong understanding or the self-belief or wrong view.
Just coming back to the comments about worldly conditions and the suttas about karma, and we read, for example, that because of past karma, someone was born into a wealthy family or something like that. So we know that actually it's about jitas, chetasikas and rupa. And when it says it's a result of karma, can one say just kusala vipaka in terms of the seeing, hearing, bodily experience and just a variety of javana chitas in response to those vipaka?
Just concepts.
Yes, so just different concepts in relation to it. So in terms of Abhidharma, it's just a concept about moments of vipaka and various responses or reactions to those moments of vipaka. That's all one can say.
Yeah, because you see that what is rich, who is rich? Yeah. See, it's only thinking.
It's just moments of thinking only.
Okay. Yeah. Seeing, is seeing rich?
No.
Or hearing rich? No. Or what is rich?
No. Sense to experiences can't experience rich. So when they say, oh, it's conditioned or caused by karma, it means just indirectly, thinking indirectly caused by conditioned by moments of vipaka.
And since the sense objects must be pleasant or unpleasant, either one.
Yes.
That is the concept about whether it's rich.
Oh, okay.
To experience the pleasant object.
So to experience more than a pleasant object is what rich means. So rich. And if it particularly specifies rich in terms of money, oh, he was born into a very wealthy household. So then it's not just rich in terms of sense experience, but
a person who is so sick, who cannot walk, but he has lots of money. Is he rich?
Yeah. No.
He could be in constant pain all the time.
Cannot experience very unpleasant like other people.
So the rich always refers to the concept about pleasant experience.
Yes.
One can read something that seems very straightforward about karma and vipaka, but actually without quite a lot of understanding of Abhidharma, it's not going to be understood at all.
In reality, was Buddha richer after his enlightenment?
Certainly.
Actually, why even bring the concept of rich into this anywhere in
because
Dhamma?
Because people know a concept.
But they have it's always tied to
no, nothing about reality
way.
Is what they think is only idea or concept.
No, but especially when you talk about rich, it's
sense object. Can anyone say that anyone is rich?
Yes. So the idea of being rich or poor is completely different from what
moments
I understand.
Of experiencing pleasant object or unpleasant object.
So simply call it pleasant or unpleasant. Why call it rich poor?
Who is rich in hell?
Why even bring the concept up?
In hell? Pleasant object or unpleasant object?
And
so who is rich?
I find it pleasant
but
and unpleasant object.
Yeah.
Well, don't rich people tend to experience slightly more frequency of pleasant object? Very billionaire.
Not necessarily.
Than they would if they were poor.
So a poor person in India, a street sweeper, possibly experiences less pleasant objects than a multi-millionaire living in
Thailand. Who can say? Who can say?
Okay, so we can't say that at all.
Who can say which has more pleasant visible objects or more pleasant sounds or more pleasant moments of bodily experience?
Generally, being born into a rich family is going to be a result of kusala karma. Doesn't mean that you'll have more pleasant objects in your life than someone else who was not born into a rich family. But
obviously, being reborn in a hell plane is going to be a condition for a lot of akusala.
Well, I can understand.
Do you remember
Ajahn mentioning assumptions yesterday?
I'm relating the stories in the sutra again to ultimate reality, and I suggest that there is some relationship between conventional reality and ultimate reality. Like I see the conventional truth, the conventional idea as being the shadow of the ultimate reality. So the stream of nama and rupa for a rich, healthy person is like more likelihood of pleasant vipaka arising more frequently than for the person born into a very poor family in poor health.
I think that is true, but it's not as precise as each moment.
Ken?
For example, the poor. What about the seeing of the poor and the rich?
Well, if the poor person is born in India and he lives near a sewer, as someone said, an open sewer.
What about in Thailand?
In Thailand, they're lucky poor people. If you're going to be poor, being born in Thailand is better.
And what about other places?
Well, it depends. The rich person born in the very rich house, he sees beautiful objects, sense objects many times, more than the poor person.
Let's talk about the servant of the Maharani's palace. The seeing sees the same thing.
Yes, of course.
Or the taste.
Yes.
The same food.
Maybe the servants have slightly not so good food as the king.
Maybe better because she's the cook.
Okay, true. But that's getting close. I like to use extremes.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it's generally true, right?
Because usually I'd like to use the precise reality.
The Abhidhamma is obviously the right
one. Yeah, because, for example, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. Can we say that they are rich or poor?
No.
But when we think in terms of how often that they can
arise,
have more moment of pleasant object, of experiencing a pleasant object, then we call it rich.
Yes.
But in Tipitaka, the one who just craves for things cannot be the rich one.
Right.
Never enough. So those only who have pochanka can be called rich.
Only the enlightened pochanka.
So there are many meanings depending on what aspect we are talking about.
Actually, Robert is right. If he limits it to the fact that it comes down to experience through six doorways, to five doorways, and it's not about money. It's just you're talking about how it happens frequently. So in this case, the maid will be as rich as the owner, right?
Not quite as rich.
Or even richer if she gets praise for her cooking, but the owner doesn't.
Like the leprotic beggar in Bombay compared to the multi-millionaire is better extreme. We can understand it easier.
Or the gardener enjoys the garden, but the owner is just like indifferent to it. He just walks past, you know.
But enjoying is javana process. It's not the moment.
Visible object.
But the visible object, the owner sees the visible object.
The maid cooks the food and the owner never has time to eat. She eats.
That's why there is no self, no one, no thing.
So that's why we can understand the stories very accurately by the by means of the Abhidhamma.
And think more just than words, that Anuruddha is like this. And what about Anuruddha when he experienced the unpleasant object, or even the Thai king, see?
Yeah, I would find the stories in the Tipitaka generally more useful because they are a reflection of genuine wisdom, whereas stories we assume about ourselves may not be.
Usually it's not.
Well, that depends.
And in reality, is there Anuruddha at moment of hearing about his life, or is only thinking?
Thinking. Yeah, it depends whether the thinking's with the right understanding or not, of course, where it's useful. And it's not as good as understanding the present moment, which is what you're already pointing out, right?
And while one is listening to his life, what about one's own citta?
Yes.
Kusla or akusla? The point of the teachings is to understand realities as they are.
interesting, going back to your point you made, I said there was a, talking about the stream of Nama and Rupa. Of Nama and Rupa. And you objected to me using that term because you said there is no stream of Nama and Rupa, right? Mm-hmm. But I think we, concepts like the stream of Nama and Rupa are dharmically accurate because it's understanding that there is citta and citta-sika rising in a series, a process, a continuing process. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to talk about concepts like that.
Could we just not just say particular sentient being then, with the understanding?
Sorry?
A particular sentient being, or,
Why don't you just ask the question directly to a general?
Well, what's that? Okay, what is the question?
Stream of Nama and Rupa, is this idea...
Whatever your question is.
Okay, now, who experienced just one citta at a time?
Nobody experiences any citta. Lots of thinking.
Yeah, and seeing and hearing and smelling, tasting, touching, whatever arises. But you see that since there is no exact understanding of just one characteristic of a reality at a time, they seem like they go together right now. The whole bunch or stream, it just say that since each citta arises and falls away so fast, it seems like there are so many cittas now, both seeing, hearing, thinking, like a stream. But it's not a stream at all, because it's not water.
Mm. Okay, well, it's a series though, right?
Yes. Right now, it depends on awareness, whether it is aware of a reality. While there are so many, since now there are not just one, like seeing, hearing, thinking, so fast, together like a stream. But if you touch, it's not a stream. It's only coolness or just a unit of rupa which is touched.
How do you relate that to the what we were talking about before as an act of dana? Isn't that just another concept of a stream?
Citta arises and falls away in split seconds, uncountable now. How many are there? At any time, at any deep, at any situation.
But I think Ken's point is just there's only one citta ever at a time.
Yes. So an act of dana is
just a concept.
An act dana is a concept referring to many different moments.
Mm. Why do you say an act of dana is just a concept exactly? Why is it?
Well, I don't see much. I know there is some relevance that I'm missing. I don't see the relevance of speaking of dana as requiring several cittas. I haven't quite grasped that yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Anyone else want to?
I'd hazard a guess that it's one jitter is not enough. They're so fast. But I think you would never get to give over something to someone in one jitter.
But each nama performs a function, and the function can be called dana, and it just happens that it doesn't require a concept of.
To describe dana, you don't need to refer to more than just one moment. Yes. That's what they're saying.
Because, for example, when we refer to kusala, we know that all kusala, whether dana, sila, all kusala is dana, sila, or bhavana, and dana, sila, and bhavana are referring to particular kinds of citta accompanied by particular kind of citta seekers. So, to really look at what dana is in an absolute sense. It's referring to a particular kind of citta and a set of citta seekers. This is what, and the fact that there need to be many, many, many to perform an act of dana or something else is another matter completely.
But is it an important matter?
Well, we use conventional language for convenience. That's all.
Oh.
Even right now we talk about one citta arises and falls away at a time. But it's not the direct experience. So how can we imagine how many jittas arising and passing away in a split second? So what appears is only the nimitta of different realities, both nama and rupa.
So this stream of cheetahs.
Yes,
like, as John told me a while ago, each cheetah conditions the following cheetah. Now, isn't that the end of the stream of cheetahs? That's all you need to know. There's no extended thing where a rich man receives lots of the parkas, good the parkas, and a poor man lots of bad the parkas. When you talk about a stream in that sense, you're getting away from the Abhidhamma.
That's all we need to know, that one chitta conditions the next chitta.
But as karmapachya can work over a longer period of time than just the next chitta, right? Do we accept that? Is that right, Ajahn?
In that sense, yeah. I think one can use stream, since each chitta follows upon the next one and so on. So can one say in that sense there is a stream of chittas?
It's like
of
this moment.
Yeah.
Not just one chitta arising and passing away. Mm. It seems like there are seeing, hearing, thinking a lot. So can we say that? Since
not in that sense.
But when there is awareness, awareness arises, and it is a way of a characteristic, uncountable either.
The one individual has a different accumulation, so in that sense maybe we can use a stream for Lodwijk or for Nina, different.
Just
different.
To mean that it's not just one jitta appearing at a time.
No.
Just so we use that term.
Yeah.
We can use.
But it's a totally different idea that we started with. We started with seeing it in terms of connection from don't know where to now, right?
Which is true, right?
Refer to, huh?
Which is true, right? It's correct.
Right.
The vipaka of this moment was conditioned by a karma long ago, presumably, or
in the same stream of.
Right.
Yeah, it has to be in the same stream.
Right.
Yeah.
But this chitta contains everything. There's no store of back there. It's all in the present chitta.
Yes.
So when it conditions the next one,
yes,
that explains the past karma's, how the past karma is stored.
Yeah.
Who knows what chitta has gone? Who knows what chitta has gone now? See? Just thinking.
Mm. And if you call the stream chittas a name or have any idea about it, again, it's just an idea about it. It's not.
Like Anuruddha, say. Just an idea about it.
Yeah, we just say it's Anuruddha's stream or something, but it's just thinking about it. Actually, it's just different moments of chitta, that's all.
In a sense, though, I think the more we understand correctly the Abhidhamma, then the conventional stories in the suttas should also make more sense. That's one of my sort of contentions too, that they understand about the story, like about Anuruddha, better. So we don't have to run away from those stories and say, oh, it's not really Abhidhamma, it's just situation. Rather, we apply the Abhidhamma to understand the suttas, in a sense.
I tend to think that the suttas help us understand the Abhidhamma. So it's just a conventional way of explaining the same thing.
They must point to the same realities.
You could also say the better you understand the Abhidhamma, the better the Abhidhamma is understood, the less reliant in a way one is on the suttas.
I would think so. But still nice to read suttas.
And what is more interesting?
Depends on the person.
Sometimes.
What do you mean by interest?
Sometimes.
What is more interesting? Seeing right now? Or the story of someone? Or I? Or what?
Depends what you mean by interesting. Do you mean panya or do you mean lopa?
Yeah. Are you now interested in seeing? So amazing. So interesting. The way reality arises and falls away. Never come back. But it can be object of clinging when there is no understanding.
Usually, object of clinging.
That's why we can see the value of panya, right understanding.
Related to this about suttas and that, there's discussion on BSG I was looking at that one person is convinced rupa doesn't arise and pass away, and he quotes suttas about rupa as has the characteristic of rubbing away. So he thinks, like, if you see a table now when it's brand new and you look at it 5 years later, you can see the paint's a bit rubbed and it looks older. And he thinks rupa just changes very gradually, and he thinks the Buddha says that. He doesn't believe the Abhidhamma at all. He thinks this shows the Abhidhamma is wrong. We know that rupa rises and passes away extremely fast, but why do those suttas talk about
rotting away?
That's not the sutta. It's more the one about rupa has the characteristic of change while
rupati, isn't
it? It breaks.
Rupati,
breaking down.
Rupa with two pieces.
What is more difficult to see, the change or the passing away of nama, or the passing away of rupa?
Both are hard.
Nama is faster.
We're talking about the arising and falling away of nama, but what about the arising and falling away of rupa? It can be thought about like yesterday and today, 10 years after this moment, what would happen to this tree or that. But it's only rupa. But the nama is more faster than that.
The nama is harder.
So why there's doubt just about rupa?
Must be also about nama.
But they do talk about change conventionally in the suttas. Sometimes, not always, rather than the ultimate way in the Abhidhamma,
In order to know that it has to be the present moment arising and falling away, otherwise there cannot be any change appearing at all.
That's true, yeah. Well, even science sort of, physics sort of in a rough way supports Abhidhamic understanding in a rough way.
But the most important thing is that it seems like we understand what is said in Tipitaka, like visible object or the object of seeing. See, he just passed to other moment instantly. But actually, is there more and more precise understanding about or of visible object right now, which appears in order to become detached from taking it for something permanent, like things or people. We just run across the reality of visible object to sound or other thing, while there is always seeing and visible object appearing. It shows that the understanding of reality is only theoretical knowledge. But by having sanya of hearing more about visible object, there can be moments of direct awareness, even just very little about visible object. It's just appear. What it can be is only that which can be seen only. You cannot take it home or anywhere at all.
I have a question following on from that. This also relates to what a friend was writing to Sukhin and I on the list. We know that what is seen is just that which is seen, visible object. And we also know from our studies that color is one of the inseparable elements in every kalapa of rupas. So, for example, in what we call the tree or the rock out there that isn't seen at all at this moment, there are kalapas of rupas arising and falling all the time, which contain the element of colour. Now, the visible objects that's seen at the moment, it's just that which is seen, it's not the colour of a rock, for example, because that would just be some idea about it. What's seen is what's seen. So how does this relate to
what we hear about as color as one of the inseparable rupas in
can
a kalapa.
Can we change from the term color into that which can be seen?
That which can be seen. Okay, so let's put it this way then. What is seen now is just that which can be seen.
Which arises with the four primary rupas.
Which arises with the four primary rupas and...
Otherwise, there's nothing to be seen.
Nothing to be seen. So it's one of the inseparable ingredients, and when there are conditions for that aspect, that which is seen to appear, that is what appears. Now, this aspect or this characteristic of that which is seen, it's actually arising, falling away in every kalapa, even in all the objects that are not seen at this moment. There still seems to be some...
This will block the understanding of this world object
as
it is.
To even think about it, yes. So no point to even think about it. All we can say it is that
because it's not thinking, we don't have to think what condition seeing,
no.
Whether it arises with the four primary rupas or not.
No point in thinking about it.
It's just a reality, just a reality, which is seen or which can be seen. Otherwise, you think a lot about how come this reality to be seen.
Okay. The reason this comes up is because some friends who we write to think that there is only ever that which is seen at moments of seeing, but in fact we know that regardless of whether there is seeing, this element is arising and falling away in every kalapa,
because
everywhere, all over the place.
Because you see that at moment of thinking, there's attachment already, before there's thinking about it.
It helps, perhaps, to know that the kalapas, the great elements condition visible object, to understand that visible object is so has many varieties. It's not the same. Otherwise, people think of gray only or one color, which is not so. It may help.
With the idea of self?
No, I think with understanding.
No, because it's I who know.
No.
But not the moment of understanding the reality which thinks and the reality which sees at all.
Like sounds are very different. There is not a neutral sound. People will look for a neutral sound. They're thinking, of
thinking
course.
Again.
Yeah. So it may help to know conditions.
Just to understand intellectually, and one can see whether one can directly experience it or not.
Yeah.
And the first thing is to have conditions for direct awareness. Otherwise, it is only thinking,
just
intellectual understanding.
Story.
And lopa is not easy to see or to understand, because it seems like there's no lopa, but actually it's there. Even just a little bit, the process of attachment, when there is the idea of trying to know.
But the Abhidhamma, it's useful to know about the kalapas, the groups.
For someone to experience directly, or what?
That is the goal, to have direct understanding.
But you're not going to have direct understanding of a kalapa.
No.
No? Third jhana can.
Oh, okay. Third vipassana jhana.
Spaces in between. Can it be directly experienced with attachment?
No.
Not at all.
Experience, but not understood.
So?
Useless.
Avijja experience.
Yes.
Not panya.
Yes.
Like now.
Yes. So nothing changes. Mm-hmm. Nothing changes at all, but there's just understanding. That's
panya
all.
Grows.
Mm.
So if we say, more thinking, I know, if we say that the color or that which is seen as the essential element in the kalapa of the rock or the tree or whatever, if we refer to that as that which is seen, but most of the time it's not seen. So you mean that which can be seen, because at this moment the visible object is seen.
So that is that element which
that
is
can
seen.
Be seen.
That, so that can be seen, yes.
While the other rupa cannot be seen at all.
Yeah. Okay, so rather than referring it to as the colour of, and it's better to refer to it as the element that can be seen. Yeah.